You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you get the latest episodes. Training camp begins for the 2020-2021 season in just a few days. So I'll be breaking down the league's policy for dealing with COVID-19 later on the show before debating if and why the national media has a bias against the Miami Heat. But first, we have a basic understanding of a season schedule, key dates, more. And I'll get into that here because I think you should know what's going on, because right now I feel so wildly unprepared. I know you probably don't want to hear that as you're listening to this podcast, but the reality is it just has gone so quickly. It feels like just a day ago the Heat were playing in the NBA Finals. Since then, obviously, a lot has happened. Players have come and gone. There's been the draft. There's been trades. There's been free agency. There's been so much happening. And now, seriously, as you're listening to this podcast on a Monday, the Heat are going to resume individual workouts the following day. Tuesday, December 1st, individual player workouts will be permitted according to the NBA. During that same time, concurrently, there will be media week. It won't be the same media day that we've had in the past. We're not going to be allowed in the arenas, not just yet. We've already heard from a number of teams that either local policies will prevent media from even converging in enclosed areas like this, or the team will already have some kind of restrictions in place. We've wondered about that, at least from my perspective, and perhaps you don't really care one way or the other, but from a media perspective, we've already seen the writing on the wall that it seems like we'll have a lot less access than what we've been accustomed to. From the players' side, they're probably happy about it. And it's unfortunate because, well, I feel like a lot of you rely on us to be able to present those kinds of stories. That kind of access gives us the opportunity to see those stories, to tell them in a much more fluid and accurate way. It doesn't always work out that way. I know there are plenty of quote-unquote media members that will go in there to the locker room and not necessarily do anything with that access, or they'll ask ridiculous questions that probably are more reflective of a certain level of unprofessionalism. I don't want to debate all that. It's kind of hard to explain the nuances of what the locker rooms used to be, and I have no idea whether or not they're ever going to get to that point again. That's a whole other discussion. That's probably something best kept amongst media circles. But moving forward, as far as the schedule is concerned, December 6th, group player workouts will begin. That means teams will be converging. It will be, in effect, a training camp. I'm not sure if they're going to be calling it that because it is so short. Now, there's also going to be preseason games. From December 11th through the 19th, Miami will have two preseason games. On Monday, December 14th, it will be a home game at the America Airlines Arena versus the New Orleans Pelicans. And then on Friday, December 18th, the team will travel to the Tampa area to take on the Toronto Raptors. If you haven't heard, the Raptors will be taking their whole schedule. They'll be playing from a home arena, quote-unquote home arena, in the Tampa area because of restrictions allowing for international travel. So that's the only way that teams will be able to face the Raptors within a regular season schedule. Again, this is a very strange time for not just the Raptors, but all around the NBA. And it's going to be very, very odd to see that Raptors team be completely disconnected from their fans and their media and things of that sort. We'll see how it all plays out. I have no idea. We've never seen anything like it. I had similar concerns prior to the Orlando bubble. It worked out very well for the most part, but we'll see what happens moving forward. From December 22nd, then, of course, that's the start of the regular season, the quote-unquote first half of the regular season. That will be from December 22nd to March 4th. And then the All-Star break will kick in from March 5th to March 10th. That's basically a week off for players. There won't be any All-Star festivities. There'll still be All-Star selections because too many players' contracts are tied to those awards and ramifications that could cost players millions of dollars. So they'll still be nominated as All-Stars. They just won't be able to converge on Indianapolis. We've already heard that the All-Star weekend or All-Star festivities that were going to be taking place in Indianapolis this year will be moved to the 2024 season, when hopefully There will be a vaccine. There will be a lot more in place to keep players safe, to keep fans safe. So we'll see how it all plays out. And then from March 11th to May 16th will be the second half of the regular season. There will be a playoff play-in tournament from May 18th to the 21st, similar to what we saw in the Orlando bubble. Maybe there'll be one for the Eastern Conference, one for the Western Conference. It's not quite clear yet. It depends on seeding, games that have to be played, things of that sort. And then the playoffs. The NBA playoffs will begin again on May 22nd and be approximately 2 months. They're scheduled from May 22nd to July 22nd. So this is all, again, very, 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 very strange, trying to figure out all the nuances of this. The schedule, I think it's as good as you can possibly allow for. Those are the key dates. Those are pretty standard. They'll probably change. There'll be some flexibility. It's interesting to see whether or not these things actually do wind up going through some change over the next few weeks or months during the course of the regular season. Again, it's going to be a 72-game regular season, and we've already got some structure in place for what teams will be playing, well, for which teams will be playing which teams as far as their schedule will be concerned. Each team will play 3 games against each opponent in its conference. So that will be 42 total games because, of course, there are 15 teams in each conference minus the Heat. You'll be playing the other 14 teams 3 times. So they'll still be adhering to conference-type structures, the East versus the West. Home games or road games will be randomly assigned. So you might play 2 games at home against, you know, the Boston Celtics, and there are 2 games at Boston. It's not quite determined yet. That schedule has not been released and won't be released until the start of training camp in just a few weeks. All 5 teams from within a division will play all 5 teams from one other intra-conference division, either the Midwest or the Northeast division, as far as other potential playoff, or I'm sorry, other potential teams that you'll be facing over the next few, you know, months. And then you'll be facing the other intra-conference division at least twice on the road. So we'll see how that plays out. Each team will play 2 games against each opponent in the other conference. There'll still be games going up against the Western Conference opponents, 30 total games there, with each team facing, again, twice. So you'll be facing the Lakers once at home, once again in Los Angeles. They'll probably be, like, they have to do something mathematically where they're able to arrange for teams to travel less frequently to minimize the exposure of COVID-19. When you go to Los Angeles, you won't just take on the Lakers. You'll probably take on the Clippers. You'll probably take on the Warriors. It'll be a West Coast road trip to, again, minimize traveling. We'll see how it all plays out. I don't know. Right now, since fans aren't going to be allowed in the arenas, you're probably going to be still traveling there, and I don't know how it's going to work as far as accommodations are concerned. It's all going to be very, very, very strange, very new, very interesting. We've never seen anything like this before. The schedule will actually be released in 2 segments. Like I said, the first half schedule in just a few weeks. The second half of the season will be released later on during some part of the first half portion of the schedule. The second half will include the remainder of each team's 72 games. So it won't be even. That's the All-Star break, similar to what we've seen in years past. Some teams will have played 40 games. Some teams will have played 38 games. Some variation of that. So there will always be somebody questioning whether or not, oh, my team gets screwed because we have 40 back-to-back games during the next 3 months as opposed to, you know, 20 back-to-back games. I don't know. I'm not sure how many back-to-backs there will actually be scheduled during the next few months. I figure there has to be some just because of the time constraints and trying to play 72 games as often as possible within the next few months. So, you're going from December 22nd to May 22nd. Not a whole heck of a lot of time to try and squeeze in 6 months worth of 72 games. We'll see how it all plays out. And again, the All-Star break was scheduled to take place between March 5th and March 10th. So following March 11th, that will be termed the second half of the season. It won't actually be a second half because it will in reality be just over 2 months as opposed to, you know, 3.5 months that will have been the quote-unquote first half of the season. A lot to break down there. I'm not sure exactly how it impacts Miami, but they'll have to go through it just like any other team will. That's the reality. I you know, fans will complain. There'll be issues. And it's going to be impacted because of something that's a huge X factor moving forward. There's going to be some ramifications as the league prepares for the impact of COVID-19. How are they doing it? We've already seen other sports rocked by the coronavirus, and there won't be a bubble to keep things secure. But I'll be talking about it next here on the #1 Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and more. So it was the day after Thanksgiving, right? And I'm thinking to myself, I got to try to get as many of these leftovers as possible. And I was trying to see if we could schedule more of a family dinner, much more organized than a lot of people. I know a lot of listeners probably grab the leftovers, make themselves a sandwich, and just take it easy. But for me, I wanted to wait, have a more formal leftovers type dinner. I thought, why not? It's just a few of us here at the house. So in the meantime, I wanted a snack. I wasn't willing to wait. I was still hungry. So what did I do? Grab myself a Built Bar because it kept me going, gave me the nutrients I needed, and at the same time filled me up. I wasn't hungry anymore. And it's so great because you have so many different flavors. So you just want something that's a change of pace. If you're getting a little tired of the extra leftover stuffing and turkey and mashed potatoes and anything else that you might have had, a healthy Built Bar that has so many different flavors and so many nutrients to keep you going. Again, they're great for people who are looking for a snack. Built Bars are the way to go. And they're covered in chocolate, so it's like you don't even know that you're eating a protein bar. It's amazing. And again, so many different great flavors, 18 in total. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Later this week, I'll be answering some key questions for the Miami Heat as they start training camp. So make sure you're up to speed by subscribing to Locked On Heat on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the newest episode. So the coronavirus, COVID-19, just as we're trying to ignore its ramifications around the world and here in the state of Florida, I mean, I don't know that any state is particularly worse than others. I know there are a lot of cases around the United States, and I've seen enough people kind of pretending that things are normal and trying to return to normalcy as much as possible. I don't want to get into a political debate. I think we can all agree at this point that it's very real, and that we should be doing everything possible to minimize its spread, wear masks, stay at home as much as possible, practice social distancing when you do go out. I've seen a lot of people just blatantly disregard those kinds of things, whether it's not wearing a mask or just going out to places that they probably shouldn't. And of course, certainly not maintaining any sort of 6 feet distance from people. So it's going to continue to be widespread. And while you may not show any symptoms, there are going to be other people who will feel the impact of that. So please do what you can. This is not just for listeners here in Florida or in Miami. This is for listeners around the world. And I appreciate that you're trying to do the best that you can to maintain the health of you and those people around you, because we all are in this together. And hopefully the more we start to think about our impact on other people, the sooner we can move on to some semblance of a normal life. Anyway, rant over. Just wanted to talk a little bit about what the NBA is going to do regarding the potential impacts of COVID-19, because there will be some. And they have issued a 134-page document detailing all the different plans in effect. And it's similar to what we've heard from some reporters, what was laid out prior to the Orlando restart this past season. So there will be some similarities in place, but unfortunately, because the bubble just is not a realistic option for a number of reasons. It just, well, it's going to be a slightly different thing. But as far as the ramifications that we know are probably going to be impacting the team more often than not, it's going to be, there's going to be regular testing. I'm not sure if it's going to be daily testing, probably. They're still going to be staying at some hotels, which you assume will follow their own protocols. You're going to try to minimize impact with other non-NBA personnel. Team traveling parties are going to be limited to that same 45-person group, just as they were in the Orlando bubble. So you'll have a limited amount of media representatives, trainers, coaches. Some people will stay at home. Maybe there'll be concerns for older coaches, just as there were in the Orlando bubble. And we'll see how that takes place, how it shakes down. You're going to have to make some accommodations here and there. There's always going to be a 17-man roster for each team allowed. So I think you'll start to see some players traveling in and out. I don't know if there's going to be any G League schedule in place. Again, we have not heard anything specific about that. It's going to be tricky. And right now, if a player tests positive, there are two different ways of getting that player back on the court. According to Tim Bontemps, as he laid out in a recent piece for ESPN.com, there are the two options, a time-based resolution and a testing-based resolution. Under the time-based resolution, an infected person would have to have gone at least 10 days since the date of their first positive test or the onset of any symptoms. Under the test-based resolution, a person must return at least 2 consecutive negative tests from samples taken at least 24 hours apart. So maybe there was a false positive or something like that. But this is where it really gets strange. It seems like, at least this is how I understood it from Bontemps' piece, and maybe I wasn't quite clear myself, but it looks like any player that tests positive will have to wait a minimum of 12 days before they can return to play. That's crazy. 12 days. We're going to see players dropping left and right here, and it's going to change the course of a season for a lot of these teams. Think about an injury and how that plays out during a normal season. You're missing basically 2 weeks of action, 12 days, a minimum of 12 days. And while you can still do some exercise and things and work out at a facility, you really also have to kind of, you know, stay on the shelf for a couple of days. You can't really be allowed access to these facilities. You'll be able to work out your own home or your own hotel or things of that sort. You'll have to wear a mask wherever you go. And you have to hope that was, you won't have any kind of symptoms. If there's any way that you're going to have some major symptoms or you have to be hospitalized, then things really get changed there. So we've already heard that there's going to be a quote-unquote snitch hotline set up where you can basically say, oh, I saw X player go out. It's going to remain anonymous. There's going to be jokes. Oh, Jimmy Butler ratting on himself that he's working too hard at 3 in the morning. Haha, we get it. In any case, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I think it's a good structure in place to let players know they've got to be accountable. And I think that's crucial because you expect, again, this is going to be very, very weird, very flexible, very unusual. And while the bubble helped Miami, and to some degree, at least in my opinion, because they were able to just focus, you don't have to worry about health concerns. You do what you have to do, which is work, focus on basketball, move forward from one game to the next. You're still traveling. Can you maintain that focus for 6 months? That seems a little less likely, especially if you're traveling from place to place and with the impact of travel already well documented as a severe impact for players and the quality of play and their overall health over the course of a season, especially when you're playing more games during a shortened amount of time. It's good that there is going to be a hotline in place, or at least the understanding that you're held accountable for your actions. Hopefully there won't be Lou Williams's going to strip clubs in Atlanta, but you're going to face the Hawks at least twice. And if that's the case, who knows if you're going to stop over for some lemon pepper wings or not. You know, you're going to go to Boston. You might see your girl there. You know, you're going to travel to places that you played in college. You're going to have some kind of connection to that city. You're going to want to hang out with your friends there. Look, after every game, and I know it's going to be very different because there won't be any fans allowed in the arenas for the first part. But, you know, after games, players shower. They leave the locker rooms. If they don't have to travel right away, let's say they don't have a game the next day or something like that, and there's a little bit of a break, they usually congregate at an emptied arena, and they talk to family members, they talk to girlfriends, they talk to girlfriends' friends, they talk to cousins, friends of friends. It's a pretty big group there. And of course, they won't be allowed in the arena next season, but that doesn't mean those people aren't going to be in the city that you're traveling to. Let's say Jimmy Butler travels to Houston for a matchup against the Rockets, at least once this season. You know, twice in total, once at home, once on the road. So you're going to travel to Houston, near Tomball, Texas. Does he have any friends there that he wants to connect with? Maybe. You know, when he travels to LA, is he going to hook up with Mark Wahlberg? Probably. You know, these are the kinds of things you have to consider. And when you do, when you have that kind of, you know, expanding entourage of people that you're going to connect with, that just increases the risk that you're going to be able to contract coronavirus at some point. And again, if you're being tested daily and you have rapid testing results in place and you do test positive, well, you're going to miss 12 days, it seems. And it's going to be really, really difficult. Like, you're going to see impacts of that. And I know I feel like I'm being somewhat of a naysayer. I had concerns prior to the Orlando bubble. It worked out very well. We did see players break curfew or break the restrictions in place in the Orlando bubble, Lou Williams being most notable of them, but there were others. And you know, it didn't necessarily impact the games themselves, but this is somewhat different. you know, this is, again, there's going to be travel. There's going to be players testing positively here. And if that's the case, it could change, you know, having your best player available for a number of games. We've already heard that James Harden was somewhat disconnected because he had apparently tested positively. Russ Westbrook, same thing. You know, we've heard reported that Kendrick Nunn was, you know, had tested positive. He was never able to work his way back into the rotation. I believe that was for other reasons. But overall, again, if you're starting to see players expand the number of people they have in contact with, again, you know, this is if you're able to limit your interaction with family and friends and people asking for tickets, and, you know, again, nobody's getting tickets because there's not going to be any fans allowed in arenas. At least that's the assumption moving forward. You know, you're in a city and you go to a restaurant, you go to the hotel lobby. Yeah, are you going to be talking to somebody there without a mask? You know, maybe. You see people at bars and restaurants all the time now without masks. So does that increase your chance of getting or contracting the coronavirus? That's the whole thing, is that we're going around with our daily lives. And again, I know this sounds somewhat of a doomsday type rant, but we're going about our normal daily lives, interacting with people without masks, small groups of people, especially now as numbers are going to spike following the Thanksgiving holiday. And we're talking about increased exposure. And while we might think, oh, here we are safely in our team bubble as far as the hotel lobby or our hotel room and limiting the number of people we have access to because we're playing games in arenas without fans, well, you still have the chance of interacting with a waitress, a server at a restaurant, your concierge at your hotel lobby, you know, and these are 25-year-old male athletes that are probably going to want to hook up while they're on the road. Don't need to get into any details there. I'll let you guys figure that out on your own. But I think it's just realistic. There are players still in this day and age that like to get after it. And even with the coronavirus impacting all facets of life, that's certainly going to play an impact. We already saw it happen in the Orlando bubble. We saw Daniel House have to invite somebody into his room. We saw other players have theoretically leave the bubble. We heard horror stories about female employees within the Disney bubble be offered large sums of money by players. I don't know whether or not those were true. I can't confirm any of those. The reality is, though, that now it's going to be different. You're going to be traveling to Minnesota. You're going to be traveling to Sacramento. You're not going to have anything else to do. And if you're there for 2 days, well, let's just say that those odds go up pretty high. Will it decide the season? It could. And I think that's what we're thinking about here, is that, you know, there are going to be a lot of long-term ramifications, short-term as far as the bubble is concerned. But, you know, we were already hearing now, a month after the fact, that Miami season or performance in the bubble was a fluke. How much of that was going to, you know, increase if Miami is the only team that somehow manages to avoid having anybody exposed to coronavirus or COVID and still winds up having a very successful season? Is it going to be a fluke then too? Are we going to see other teams take advantage or leapfrog past other quote unquote better teams because they weren't, you know, impacted by COVID-19? Very likely. These are questions that we have to think about moving forward. It's going to be very, very unusual. We've never seen anything like this before. We've never seen anything like that, you know, like the bubble, but that was a bubble and it was very, very successful. You had players test positively before they reported to the Orlando bubble, but by and large, you were able to restrict the number of people coming into the Orlando bubble. Everybody wore masks. It was very, very effective. That won't be the case. We've seen the NFL, we've seen Major League Baseball, we've seen soccer teams, college sports. Everybody's been impacted. How will the NBA be able to respond? The national media, however, do they hate the Miami Heat? I can practically see you all nodding your heads in agreement, and I'll debate that next here on Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and always leave a review. This question comes in from Billy Ocelot, and I have to say my apologies to you, Billy. You did send this a while ago, right, during the NBA Finals run, so maybe the question seems a little bit more related to what was going on there. I know a number of you have sent in questions that either just once you sent them in, they didn't they weren't valid anymore because, you know, things have been changing so quickly. You know, I got a question just last week about a potential trade for Giannis, and then we start to hear about, you know, the BAM super extension and everything else. And of course, then the trade talk doesn't seem as relevant. So apologies to everybody. I do want to have more mailbag episodes now moving forward with the season right around the corner. But back to Billy's question, he asks, why does the national basketball media hate on the Heat so much? I'm so sick of hearing about how this was just an anomaly for the Heat, that they were the worst finals team in years, that Jimmy just fluked his way into some of the finest finals performances in history. I mean, what gives? I hear takes from all over the media world about how the bubble is an excuse for why the Bucks and the Celtics lost to us, yet they use the same bubble excuse to downplay the Heat's success. The shade this team is getting after such an amazing run is very annoying. What are your thoughts on it? Is it warranted? Is this Heat team really noticeably worse than Boston, as the national media would like us to believe? A lot of good points there. A lot of subjective perception about this. And look, think about it from this perspective. And just to kind of shade everything. So first and foremost, thank you, Billy, for sending in the question, even though I didn't address it some time ago when you first did. But back to the response. Lakers fans feel like their team doesn't get enough love. So I totally understand why some Heat fans feel like their team is getting shat on fairly regularly. But let's be honest, the Lakers and their 18 championships or whatever, however many that they have and however many they actually earn and whatever, they still feel like they're a team that gets beat up a lot. Like, woe is us. You know, we're the lowly Lakers. How can you not respect us? I don't know. It's ridiculous. Fans are fans. You're going to always feel like your team is trash somewhere. I feel like some of these concerns are somewhat legitimate. I don't want to come across as a homer, nor do I necessarily want to trash a very valid feeling that a lot of you have. I know that I felt like there was a certain level of disrespect towards the Heat in the NBA Finals and during the NBA playoffs. I don't think it was necessarily from national media. I think we all hear, let's say, Doris Burke or Mike Breen or Jeff Van Gundy talk about Miami in a way, and it's not quite the same as hearing Eric Reid talk about the Heat. There isn't that same connection, nor should there be. It's national media. It's not local sports broadcasters. And so they have to provide more of a balanced response. I will say, though, that they did not think very highly of the Heat because there was a lack of quote-unquote superstar talent. You have a top 15-ish player in Jimmy Butler. A lot of people thought prior to the NBA Finals, he was closer to 20 than he was to 10. I'm not sure how much of that has changed. Bam Adebayo was hurt. And even then, you start to see media members, fans, everybody disregard what Bam does because his numbers aren't particularly gaudy. He's not putting up 40 points per game. He's just giving you 18, 15, and 5. I mean, he's doing everything he possibly can. He plays defense at a high level. He makes plays for others, but that's just not sexy enough. Goran Dragic, again, hurt, but his numbers are weird. He's a white European player on the other side of 30. He's not Luka Doncic. He's not Nikola Jokic. You don't know what you're getting from him. He's never been a consistently superstar-level player. He's had really great seasons, really great production. Everybody who's listened to this show knows I'm a huge fan of Dragic. But I can understand why you see this roster and you go, maybe they're not as talented as other teams past. And I remember having a conversation with Rob Mahoney of The Ringer prior to during the bubble at some point when we were discussing one of his most recent pieces. And just, what the hell is talent anyway? Like, it just seems like such a vague question. Is it your ability to jump higher, to, you know, make a pass that you've never tried before? Like, Duncan Robinson might not be viewed as a very talented player, but he's also 6'7", for crying out loud. And he's also very quick and very strong and can jump very high and can shoot very well. Is that a talent? You have to work at all the things that you're, you know, given from your genetic potential. It's only genetic potential if you actually find a way to tap into it and realize it. Yes, LeBron is 6'8 and 225. Are you going to tell me that LeBron doesn't work harder than 99% of the league? Isn't that you can't have the same thing. Like, is Kobe Bryant more talented? Then how do you have a Mamba fucking mentality? Pardon my French. How do you have the legends of Kobe coming into the gym at 2 o'clock in the morning and putting up these incredible workouts and you know, deifying his workout sessions and dedication and things of that sort? Is he talented or is he a hard worker? You have to be both to make it in the NBA. So I don't know what talented is. I know that there are players that were drafted less or lower than Celtics players were. You know, no Heat player within the top 10, no real lottery picks there with the exception of Bam and Tyler Herro contributing at a high level. You got Duncan undrafted, Kendrick Nunn undrafted, and so on and so on. You know about this. I think it's kind of interesting. So I don't know what talented is. I don't think the Heat necessarily get shade. I think, again, what shade they do get, and you want to call it that, is a realistic perception that, well, maybe this team isn't as talented because they don't have a high number of top five picks. Well, the Boston Celtics had Marcus Smart, a top 10 pick. They got Jason Tatum, a top five pick. You got Jaylen Brown, a top five pick, and so on and so forth. Great. What the hell did it get them? It got them sent home early by the Miami Heat. And I don't know if it would have changed because of talent or whatever. It's just somehow it has to work. I've been very public about my, not necessarily disdain, but my mistrust of the NBA draft, because you don't know what you're getting. And to take the quote-unquote most talented player, a lot of those numbers are not an accurate reflection. And we see this all the time. Duncan Robinson didn't play much at the University of Michigan. Does it matter? He wound up having a great skill set, working his ass off, and having a team buy into it and push him to another level. We've also heard from those same Lakers fans that are so woebegone, you know, complain about the fact that they weren't able to get Duncan Robinson there. Well, given the fact that that roster has gone through as number of changes as they have, they weren't able to get the most out of Lonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram or Julius Randle or D'Angelo Russell and on and on. I have no faith that the Lakers would have been able to do anything with Duncan Robinson other than turn him into a guy who can occasionally shoot well for their G League team. As far as the Heat are concerned, you have to have fit, you have to have work, you have to have commitment. It has to tie in together. Talent is harder and harder to gauge. I don't know how the draft is a valid way of selecting players anymore, because you look at a player, you see what they've been able to do over a very limited amount of time against typically inferior competition. It's not like you're seeing them work out against NBA players so you can get a gauge about what they're going to be like. And you don't know how that's going to translate to the next level because you have questions about their work ethic. And then even past all that, do they fit on your team? Are you drafting a guard on a team that already has lots of guards? Are they going to get a lot of playing time? Look at LaMelo Ball, a very recent example. Here he is, drafted third overall. A lot of people thought he was the most talented pick in the draft. You have questions about his dedication, work ethic, about his intelligence. Some valid, maybe some invalid. Nobody knows. We'll see what kind of career he has. But then you take him over to the Charlotte Hornets, typically bad team, good, solid coaching, but no real culture of winning. You've got Terry Rozier there on the roster. And then what do? You trade for Gordon Hayward and you pay him $1 billion to be your star on your team. What happens next? Does Ball reach his potential? Does he get labeled a bust? We'll find out. As far as the national media and their hatred of Miami, I don't think there exists. I think they look at this roster, and I don't think they necessarily see the big names, the bright lights attached to it. And if that's the case, then they're going to perhaps accurately call them a less talented group. But they're also not giving enough credit, I think, to the culture, to the work ethic and things of that sort, because it does work. And maybe that's the better discussion than Billy. It's not necessarily about team culture, because that branding, you know, that Miami has been associated with so well, I think it's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, even national media members. But let's say that it's not about the culture and the dedication and the work ethic, because that exists on 29 other teams other than Miami as well. It's about Miami understanding fit better than anybody else, about understanding how you have a talent and it works best in our offense, and then getting you to maximize what abilities you do have. Whether it's, you know, getting a Duncan Robinson to shoot the lights out and to shoot, even when he's scared of doing so or apprehensive about doing so. Whether it's a guy like Tyler Herro who's encouraged to take his game to the other level. It's assessment of your skill, of your talent, and finding a way to get it all to fit in together. And yes, you hope that they have the dedication to basketball, a commitment to basketball above all else. Is that culture? Yeah, it could be. And you can also speak to experience. I think that matters. We know how to win here. That appeals to players. That appeals to everybody. You're not talking out of your ass. You're not saying things that have no bearing or no understanding. If you're the Cleveland Cavaliers and you say, well, we know how to win. Do you? Without LeBron James, you didn't really win. With LeBron James, you won. So what's the difference there? And maybe you can make that argument about Miami too. Sure, they had championship success with LeBron, but they've been able to win with other players too. You have to have superstar talent, no doubt. But you also have to have an understanding of how to get players to reach the pinnacle of their success. And Miami has found a way to do that more consistently than anybody else. So maybe it's not about talent. Maybe it's not about shade. Maybe it's about recognizing that Miami does find ways to get the players to be the best versions of themselves. And call it what you will. Call it culture. Call it anything else. It works here in Miami. Make sure you listen to Locked On NBA's on Mondays. Josh Lloyd, one of the best hosts in the network, has a wildly popular show, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. It takes you all around the NBA's major headlines with the help of local experts from all over all 30 teams. So make sure to subscribe to Locked On NBA Podcast today, wherever you get podcasts. Make sure to get your team every day and ask your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil, signing up and thanking you as always for your support.